Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Turn Back the Clock, episode number 27 for my man, Mike Trout. Adam, my co-host, welcome Adam. How's it going today?
Great, great. Happy to be here and happy to have Shane back with us.
Oh, dude, are you kidding me? Like, it's been too long. So yeah, as you guys know, we got Shane, Shoebox Legends, on the show. Shane, how's it going?
Going great. Appreciate you having me.
Dude, so stoked you could join us. Everybody in the chat, dude, I appreciate you guys being here. Just going to be a really fun episode for you guys. We're going to be discussing basically the differences between modern and vintage, like the collectors in general, and how we go about navigating the new cards and the way we see, you know, the future of our collections headed. Are you still on there? Oh, yeah, you just got kicked off, rotated. So this is going to be fun stuff. We're going to do a couple different rounds here. This isn't to tell you guys what to do or anything, but this will give a lot of guys in vintage world like me didn't collect modern for years. I just started collecting in the last like year and some months. I used to buy it all the time, but never dove in. And once I dove in, I have had so much fun. And you just, these are going to be our rules that we apply to our own collections. Whether you want to heed them or make your own is all up to you guys. But we're going to have fun with it. So we're going to do three questions. First round is going to be, what is the difference between collecting modern versus vintage? And then every guy is going to give their take on it. Second round is going to be how we personally collect modern cards, how we go about doing it in a simple form, however you guys want to share your collections. And then the third round is the case for modern, where Shane really wants to talk about this. He wants to sell you guys on collecting modern cards. No, we're just going to tell you guys how much fun it is. So let's get right into it. Shane, everybody knows who you are, so I don't need to like give you this huge introduction, but I'm going to have you go first. So we're going to go in reverse order and tell us what's the difference? Why is there like this rift between us? What is the difference? Any way you want to take that, whether it's grading differences, however you want to go. And thank you for being here.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me. So the angle I'm going to take on this one is managing your hobby budget and pricing is very, very different when it comes to vintage baseball cards versus modern, in my opinion. And I guess it's a poor analogy because I don't like linking cards to money. It's not what it's all about. But if you view it like the stock market, and I've heard you say something similar before, Dylan, vintage cards for a long time have been like your blue chip stocks, your S&P index fund. They're always kind of going up a little bit at a time, sometimes more, sometimes less, but they're always holding that value and they're a little bit more predictable. So like, as an example, you know, I've got this Satchel Paige card. It's one of my favorite cards. I picked this up, you know, 10 years ago, and it's definitely worth more now than it was 10 years ago. But it's never going to go back to, in my opinion, where it was 10 years ago. It's just going to steadily, slowly climb. And I think the modern landscape is like way more volatile. A lot of these athletes are still playing. So for better or worse, their careers could improve or go down the toilet. You could be a Wander Franco super collector and wake up one morning and all of a sudden, you know, find yourself in a world of hurt. And then, you know, on a positive note, there's other players whose, you know, cards are rising in value quickly. And I just think, not that it's all about money, but obviously all of us, we want to stretch our hobby dollars as far as we can, get the best deal that we can for our money so we can buy more cards and enjoy the hobby further. And the modern landscape, you know, it's a little bit more unpredictable. And I have a story, quick story, that's kind of an example of how that can come about. So it's going to start off soccer, but I promise it's going to get to baseball really quickly here. So I'm a big soccer fan. I love the World Cup. It's my favorite event in sports every 4 years. And Panini puts out Prism cards for the World Cup every tournament. And so in 2018, they put out their Prism set. And I bought a bunch of packs of it while the tournament was going on in the summer of 2018. They were like a buck a piece on eBay. I bought 50 packs. And one of the cards that I pulled was a Kylian Mbappe. He's the best player on the planet, in my opinion, if you don't know soccer. And at the time, it was worth like $5. So I stuck it in a box. It was kind of cool. Well, like 2 years later, this thing's worth like four figures. I sold it and I used the funds to buy a 1940 play ball Joe DiMaggio, you know, with a card that I sold from a, you know, that I pulled in a $1 pack. And then, you know, fast forward.
Hey, show that card a little more.
Yeah, so this is, you know, this is a card that I wouldn't own if it wasn't for my involvement in modern cards, because I don't have the card budget to go out and pick up this card on my own. So I have to kind of sell my way into it, or, you know, figure out a way to get there. And in this case, I sold a card that I pulled from a $1 pack. And then fast forward, you know, another 3 years to this past summer, I went back and bought back, you know, the same Mbappe card for a small fraction of what I sold it for just 3 years earlier. And so I, you know, for better or worse, I think the landscape, you know, collecting modern, it requires you to kind of be plugged in and paying attention a lot more. Like with vintage cards, you can make a list of 40 vintage cards you want to go get. And I feel like you can take the rest of your life to go out there and get them. They're going to cost you more the longer you wait, but with modern, it's changing so quickly. There are so many different sets coming out. The careers are still underway for a lot of these guys. And so I do feel like to be an effective modern collector, at least personally, I feel like I need to be more plugged in and engaged with the hobby, you know, all the time, and keeping up with updates and new sets and things like that. So that may be viewed as a negative to some, but I enjoy it because it keeps me really engaged in the hobby and the world of sports, honestly.
So what I got out of that is that we should all go out and buy a bunch of packs and open them up and try and get some really expensive cards. I'm just kidding.
Prison. I mean, that's an extreme example, but I mean, almost everybody awesome. I know who collects modern has examples like that. And I have other examples like that myself. So it does happen. And there is a sense of like timing when you're making your purchases. I think you have to pay a lot more attention to that in some cases. In modern than maybe you do in vintage, at least from my standpoint.
Yeah, I think it just moves so much faster. Everything is in warp speed, especially now. So I love where you're taking that. And I think that you almost de-sold collecting modern because it sounds really hard. But I think you're going to clarify later how you can find avenues, right?
So, absolutely. Yep.
Love it. Love that story. And I can't believe that card you just shared, that Joe D. Woo. Well, any thoughts on that, Adam?
Well, Shane's just showing off with that joke. You know, it's funny because you get so like desensitized to cards now. Like Shane just showed a 1940 Joe DiMaggio card. And I'm like, man, that's nice. But like, I don't know, like I should have a bigger reaction to that, right? Like, that's awesome. But yeah, there's so many ways I could go with this. But before I say that, I do want that polar bear shirt from Reindeer Studios. So I will be ordering one of those. I hope there's some left because I want it. If not,
dude, you gotta get this
another print run. Yeah, that one's, yeah, I like that one a lot too. But I think polar bear might be the one I want to go with first.
There you go.
Yeah, so man, I'm coming at a little different angle because I'm mainly a player collector, not fully, but you know, if you were to sum me up, I'm a player collector. So it's a little easier with vintage because you have way less choices, right? So you can, you know, it's kind of laid out for you. If you want to collect Mickey Mantle, you know, you got, you know, there's some choices, but you could do the base run, you know, it's pretty much set. You get one card per year or whatever. And then you can go off a oddball and go with, you know, all-star cards or food and beverage, but there's not that many options. But then you go into modern. Now, when I'm saying modern, I don't really collect any current players, but like, so Shane, modern would still be like 90s and 2000s stuff, right?
So I think so, yeah.
Yeah, good to clarify that. Yeah.
And then I guess ultra modern would, you know, be
call it all the same.
Okay, so it's all modern. Yeah. All right. So yeah, I don't do any like the real new modern stuff, but I kind of stopped with Tom Brady when he retired. But the thing is, you can create your own, like I've done, you can create your own lane with it. Like even though there's a million Tom Brady cards, there's a million Pedro Martinez cards, you can figure out like, all right, what lane do I want to go? I'm not going to collect all the cards, no way. But I can pick a certain lane within that player of the cards. And like what I did with Pedro Martinez, look, I'm a fan of Pedro. I loved watching him pitch, great player. But honestly, the most fun I'm having with Pedro is the actual like type collecting of the cards during the 90s. You know, like I love this card. I love Pedro on this card here. but the card itself, this is a card I wanted regardless of the player, right? Like I would have taken a Nomar, I would have taken whatever, even like a regular player, common player. But hey, if I can combine Pedro with this essential credentials from 1998, you know, I'll do it. So you can basically decide how you want to do it. You know, you don't have to get overwhelmed with it. Like, oh, he's got, you know, a million cards because he's a modern player. You could just say, I'm only going to collect his, flagship Topps card from every year, whatever you want to do. Or like what I'm trying to do with Pedro, trying to collect some of these really, chased after, high demand, low serial numbered cards from the 90s and, some in the early 2000s. And then with Tom Brady, I'm kind of mainly focusing on rookie cards now of his. He's got 43 different ones. So that alone can be a collecting lifetime right there, just chasing after every one. So, I think there's a lot of differences in the cards, but there doesn't have to be on how you collect them is my, I guess, how I want to start with this.
That's great advice. Totally agree. Yep.
Yeah. I almost feel like you took the next question and put it in on that one.
Sorry, guys.
Okay. Well, go ahead, Shane.
Oh, no. Go ahead. Dylan. Yeah.
I think that the question was the differences and I think Shane nailed it. Adam, I think you were just like too stoked to show some cards and want to go to the next.
Well, one. Okay. The difference is there's a lot more damn options with modern cards. Well, right?
All right. There we go.
That's a big difference, it. Right?
I love it. I mean, I think that's it. For me, the difference is the way that the modern group of collectors are, they want those 10s. They're kind of been bred on it. Not even all the collectors like us, but the original, the guys, the young guys collecting, they're like bred on these 10s. And I think that's the difference between vintage guys. We are way more, we understand we can't get 10s and we can't get 9s and we can't get 8s. I think the biggest difference between the both of them, like Adam said, they're both cards. They're all the same when it comes down to it. But for me, it's the conditions of the cards and getting used to collecting both and understanding that the modern guys, they like their cards to say 10s on the label, and whether that continues forever, it's definitely been engraved in their head more. I think when they come over to vintage, it's tough for them, in my opinion, to wrap their heads around trying to find good looking 3s and 4s and 5s, understanding that there's you don't need those 7s, 8s, 9s, and 10s. And obviously with the modern, you don't need those either. When I think we'll probably share a bunch of reasons why you don't need those either. But that's how I kind of divide the differences.
I got to kick back on that a little bit, cause I hear that a lot. You know, a lot of the vintage guys, they poo poo on the modern guys and they just chase the grade. They only want 10s. There is a big community. And a lot of it is in this 90s era where they really collect the card itself, because a lot of these, you could wait years for, just like pre-war guys wait years for a card to come up. And when it finally does, they don't care what the grade is. They don't care. Most of the cards change hands ungraded in the era of the 90s. So I did say poo-poo. So there we go.
No, that makes so much sense, Adam. I mean, obviously I was oversimplifying it.
But the new stuff, yes. The real new stuff, yes.
And I think what you said, I think things are changing, and I hear it on podcasts I listen to, like people are, obviously we saw the huge crash of the base cards recently over the last year, and the numbered cards have held strong. A lot of those has held strong in it regardless of the number. So yeah, good point, Adam. All right, so let's go to the next phase of this. Next question is really the bread and butter of why we love collecting modern and vintage at the same time. And you can do both and you can make it simple. You don't have to get so complicated. It isn't scary. Vintage guys are scared to get into modern sometimes and vice versa. And if you find a path and you pick it and you go down it, you can stay in that lane. You don't have to buy every single Pujols card you see or whoever you're collecting. So Shane, that question to you is, how you collect modern cards. How do you do it?
Yeah, and I think that was a great lead-in, because you will drive yourself insane if you try to collect every card of a modern player. It's just, it's not possible. You'll probably burn out and become frustrated with the hobby, you know, in pretty short order. So I agree with, you know, what Adam said previously and what you just said. Just pick a lane, whether it's a player or a set you like, or a particular team color match, or serial numbered cards, or whatever it is that you want to go after. And another big part of modern is opening wax. I don't do a lot of it myself, because I'm more interested in building a collection for the long term than the temporary enjoyment of, you know, opening a blaster or a hobby box. But it does, you know, on occasion, I enjoy doing that, because it's how a lot of us started. I think it's how most of us started, those of us that collected back when we were kids. So, you know, every beginning of the season, spring training, I like to go out and get a blaster of Topps flagship and just open it up. It's a nostalgic thing, and it kind of takes me back to the root of my collecting. But the way I try to focus on modern is I buy singles, which is not really any different than vintage collectors. I have players that I target, I have sets that I target, and I like to find items that are like a little bit more rare or unique or different for some reason. And then if I can have a personal tie to them, that's even better. So, you know, I'm never going to try to collect every Mookie Betts card, even though I love Mookie Betts. But I try to get serial numbered cards, team matching cards, cards from years where he maybe had a good season, things like that. So like here's a Mookie that I love. This is just a blue refractor out of Topps Chrome. It's a graded card. PSA, it's a 9, because I don't care about 10s, contrary to, you know, to Dylan's point, which I know a lot of modern, especially ultra modern collectors are into PSA 10s. This one's a 9 because my hobby dollar goes a little bit further if I buy 9s. But this is a serial numbered card, and I don't think you're going to be able to make it out on video, but it's copy 50 of 150, which is Mookie's jersey number, and is, you know, prominently displayed on the front of the card on that glorious Dodgers uniform. Wow. So
color match awesome. And the number match.
Yeah, color match and number match. And this is, to me, that he's one of the best 5 players in modern baseball. And I think I paid $30 or $40 for this card like a year or two ago. And it's not about money. It's, you know, fun for me. I just enjoy collecting these. And I think there's an element of just enjoyment. It kind of keeps you anchored to the game in the same way that fantasy sports do for some people. It's fun to wake up every morning and check the box scores and see how the players that you're invested in emotionally, not financially, but that you're emotionally invested in, how they're doing. And you know, with vintage, these guys, their careers are written in stone. And I love vintage. I love all cards. But with modern, I think it is cool to kind of have that element of following these guys as their career unfolds. Sure, that can blow up in your face, like with Wander Franco, for example, you know, obviously the most famous recent example, but I think if you're smart about what you're buying and you learn from all the great channels here on YouTube and all the other resources that are out there, and you're selective about what you pick up, you can have every bit as much fun collecting modern as you can vintage cards. It's a blast. I could never choose between one or the other. And I think the lines between vintage and modern to me are kind of blurred in a sense too. Like if you collect Nolan Ryan, which I do, and you work on his player run, right there, you're going to have vintage cards and you're going to have cards from the 90s in the same small collection. So I don't think it needs to be black and white. Or, you know, another example is Turn Back the Clock, the show we're on here. You know, nobody's going to call a 1990 Topps Turn Back the Clock card a vintage card, but if it has a Sandy Koufax card from the 60s depicted on it, it's got an element of vintage to it as well. So I try to find unique cards that are scarce. I don't really go after high population cards, and it's not about, you know, money. It's just about wanting to have a collection that's unique and different than something that you see every day or that you could easily attain. Kind of in the same spirit, Dylan, as you going after really well-centered vintage cards. That to you, that's an element that sets them apart from the tons of other vintage cards that are available out there. And there are different ways to do that in modern as well. Like Adam, you know, with your 90s cards, you're not picking up, you know, a 1998 Topps base Pedro Martinez for 50 cents on sport lots. You're going for these really tough, impossible to find cards. And you get that same rewarding feeling when you end up with a card like that Dylan probably does when he gets a, you know, a perfectly centered 1952 Topps card if those exist.
Totally. Yeah.
I love everything you said, Shane. Everything.
Shane, yeah, you're getting a lot of compliments in these comments, man. Well deserved. You're one of the smartest collectors I've ever come across. So yeah, love listening to you talk about, because it's so true. Like it's all cards. Like you said, they're all cards. I think for me, I have to connect to it, right? Like, so, you know, if I didn't have a player that I could really connect to or something with, like Tom Brady, I don't buy any newer cards. Like I'm talking, you know, above 2000, really. I don't buy any of those other than really Tom Brady. He's like the only player that I buy because I have a connection to him, you know, as a fan. But I could see some guys are like, I just collect vintage because that's what I connect to. If I try, you know, I hear what you're saying about modern stuff, but I don't know. I don't have the passion for it. You know, I don't want, maybe some of these guys don't watch sports now. Sure. I stopped watching sports, honestly. Like I don't watch sports anymore. I canceled my cable recently, and I'll watch the playoffs in basketball and maybe baseball. I don't know, but I find myself not watching sports right now. So I am not connecting right now to the current playing athletes, active athletes. So,
okay. Well, I guess you mentioned it earlier, Adam, but Brent asked the question or said there is a difference between modern and ultra modern. Where do you guys put that? I have no clue. I've never, you know,
Like the last 3 years, 5 years or 3 years is ultra modern, they call it, or whatever.
Yeah, I guess I'm in the camp. If you put a gun to my head and make me choose, I guess I would say I'm in the camp of modern is 1981 and newer, just because 1980 was the last year of just Topps having baseball exclusivity. But I've never really put a lot of thought into what ultra modern is versus modern. And I guess it's a moving target. So, you know, if it's the last 5 years, a card that's ultra modern now isn't going to be ultra modern in another 2 years from now. I'm not entirely sure on that one.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because even with like what I'm collecting in the 90s, the cards have been established as far as what are the chase cards for the most part. Like, you know what the big hits are, the PMGs, the essential credentials, the star rubies. There's, I mean, it goes on and on, but it's been kind of established over time. Like, all right, those are the best. You know, you might disagree, but overwhelming hobby has kind of set forth, all right, these are the best cards to go after. That's why they sell for the most money for various reasons. And that could change, but I think with ultra modern, it gets real tricky because it hasn't been established what are going to be the cards that are going to be chased after in the future. So it is a gamble. It's less of a gamble when you go a little further back because some of these players are already retired or not alive anymore, or, you know, so I think that's a huge difference between the ultra modern and the modern too.
Agreed.
Good points. Okay. Well, Adam, how do you go about collecting your modern?
So yeah, it's with, I pick the players. I like serial numbered cards. I've come to that conclusion. I love vintage cards, but I also love shiny cards. I love refractors. I love, the card, like I just mentioned, precious metal gems. Here's a, some would call this just a horrendous looking card, but when you kind of know the history of it and the prominence in the hobby of these cards, this is a Drew Bledsoe precious metal gems from 1997.
Love it.
Yeah. It's a serial number to 150 in football. It's number 17 of 150. And, you know, Bledsoe's not a hobby legend or anything like that, but he was my favorite quarterback before Tom Brady came into the picture. So I want to have a couple cards from that era and from that player. So that was one card I chose. And I forget where I was going with that, but I think you kind of pick certain types of cards that you want to collect, and whether it be shiny cards or certain brands or serial numbered cards lower than 100 or whatever. There's a lot of options, but maybe to make it like a lifelong hobby, you got to really kind of create rules for yourself. Like maybe I've done, doesn't have to be the type of rules I'm doing, but you got to maybe focus in a little bit on certain, and then you could change and focus in on something else, you know, over time, and you can keep changing if you want. But at least for me, to keep my interest, I need to have a goal, even if it's like a long, long-term goal, or it could be a short-term goal too. But for me, I need to have like projects and goals in order to keep my interest.
Yeah, absolutely. For sure. no doubt. I feel exactly the way.
I'm just going after certain players that I want to collect, player collecting only, and mainly serial numbered cards now, and nice and shiny, you know. So I like both. I hear a lot of the talk of like you're in this camp of you like the old stuff or you like shiny cards. Why does it have to be that way? Why can't it be both? I feel like all three of us are in that thinking as far as like you can appreciate both for what they are. You know, each era of the hobby has its own story and the cards reflect that. And I like having those cards in my collection because it tells the story of the hobby.
Yeah, that's so well said. And that's, to me, that's one of the reasons I love collecting modern is I kind of view my collection as like my own personally curated like history of baseball, the cards that I picked out. And so I love cards that are linked to significant seasons or achievements in the actual sport itself. So like for the same reason I love the 1956 Mickey Mantle, I also want to have some 2023 Shohei Ohtani cards in my collection because that was like a season for the ages. And I feel like if I hold myself to just one of those two eras, I'm just shutting myself off from different roads or avenues I could go down to really enjoy the hobby and learn more about the history of the game.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm just reading Darren's comment. All of my shiny cards have tanked in value. I need someone to help me better understand shininess. Yeah, it could be tricky.
That was just bad timing. I think he got into it while it was just booming. Yeah. Lou Rock made a point, and we never even made the full date set for my vintage era is anything from 1980 and before. That's vintage for me, and that is such a simple answer is because that's the last time there was a single rookie card and there was no other companies making cards basically. So that's why I put it at that. And I was born in 1980. So
I think I saw somebody put this in the comments and this is kind of how I've always envisioned the eras of the hobby is same as you, Dylan, you know, vintage through 1980. And then from 1980 through like 2010, somewhere around there, 2009, 2010, you had a ton of different companies making cards across that period. So for that like 30-year period, I kind of consider that its own era. And then I look at like 2011 to present as the era of Topps, you know, the Topps monopoly again. So that's kind of how I divide it up. But everybody's got their own opinion on that. You could probably do a whole turn back the clock on just deciding on where those lines of delineation are.
Well, I think that we should write that in the Bible because Shane is an expert. He's like the reason a lot of us guys on YouTube, for me, I'll speak for myself, but I feel like I can speak for more, just inspired me in particular to go after modern. And I went my own route. I did my own thing. But after watching his channel and him talking about things and the passion that he shares, I'll just put that in stone. I agree with you on what you said for those years and why you collect them. I love it. Okay, so for me, collecting modern, because I got in it because of Shane. I mean, I wanted to be involved a little more. And after the prices got crushed, I'm like, this is my chance to buy some Mike Trout cards. And so I'm like, well, where do I want to start? I didn't want any base cards. So what I do is I collect golds. So I went after every single Mike Trout gold card, well, every single one, but one from each year. And the gold cards are numbered to the year. And it kept me on track. And then I turned that golds into going for golds number to 50 for other players and other types of things. And then I love Topps Heritage because of the old designs. They're just, I mean, you can get these and they're hard to get. Like you get blacks and they don't make a million parallels, but the gold to me is how I stay focused. Let me give you guys a quick rundown of what not to do or learn from my mistake. So when I first got into it, I was like, oh my gosh, I want to collect all Angels cards and I wanted to collect Mike Trout. So I bought a bunch of cool Mike Trout cards. I don't regret any of my Mike Trouts because I bought all serial numbered cards or at least refractors. But then when you get to the newer stuff like Pujols, I started buying like it was an Angels cards of Pujols and I would just, so I got a whole stack, right? And there's two of them that are serial numbered, which are awesome. This one, I think this is from you, Shane.
Yeah, it's the ultimate Dylan parallel, Blue Wave.
Yes, I love the Blue Wave. I love these two, but these are the ones I would just buy like any refractor in a 10 because they're like $18 each. And it's just silly because any refractor these are like every other pack. You really need to focus. So I have a stack of like 8 cards that I wish I would not have purchased. But I realized, you know, they weren't that expensive, but I know now I stick to the good stuff. I stick to the golds. I stick to the number to 50. And what I also love about collecting ultra modern, I guess it's called, you can collect one single card and you can buy it 100 different ways. And this is like Aaron Judge's 2022 Topps Chrome, where he gets the record and you can collect stacks of them and they all look different. And I love that. It's like if you had a vintage card and you could change the color of it if you wanted. You had like, you know, or that they have some, the 69 Mantle and then 58s, the two different colors. But if they really had different colors, man, I would have been all about that. So I try and stay focused. I'm pretty good at staying focused in my lane, but I also will switch to a different guy that I collect and then you get in a whole new rabbit hole. But that's kind of how I go after it. It's not hard to collect vintage or to collect modern. So why don't we go for the next question? And that is, sell us on modern cards. Is that, that sure. was the question, right? Like,
oh, Shane, no.
you're ready for this.
I got to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And before we get that, Dylan, I really like the point you made too. You know, you're going to make some mistakes maybe when you get into something new in the hobby, and it's okay to change and switch directions and learn. You know, it's you buying those Pujolses and then kind of narrowing your focus after the fact and learning is probably not that different than you buying cards sight unseen from the pit 10 years ago because they were graded a 7. And now, you know, 15 years later, you've through all your hobby experience and your connections and everything you've learned, you target centered cards now, and you'd probably never buy a vintage card sight unseen, you know, ever again. So it's okay to make mistakes, you know, and we all adjust and improve as we go and learn from each other. So it's nothing to be intimidated by. It's a fun hobby at the end of the day, and it's supposed to be enjoyable. So I thought that was a good point. So I've got, you know, some reasons I kind of just brainstormed over the last couple of days of why I really love collecting modern cards. And the first one I want to touch on is, if you stick just to vintage, you're going to miss out on a whole subsection of players that just don't have vintage cards, even if they played during the vintage era. And, you know, the best example of that I could think of, I had to pull this card out, is this is an Allen and Ginter Josh Gibson mini. Now, awesome. He's one of the best hitters in the history of baseball, as probably everybody watching this knows. An amazing story and you know, kind of tragic story. But if he doesn't really have a vintage card. I think he has maybe a postcard that I'd have to mortgage my house if I ever even saw one. So if you're going to stick strictly to vintage and you're going to hold by that standard, you're never going to have one of the greatest hitters in the history of the game represented in your collection. And so it kind of goes back to, I want my collection to be a record of the history of baseball and all the best people that have ever played the game. And if you're going to steadfastly stick to vintage only, you're going to be missing a lot of these guys. I've learned that lesson even a lot more in the last year, because I'm really focusing now on Negro League players and former Negro League players. And those guys, just like they weren't represented in the game of baseball, they weren't represented on cards either. So, you know, it's not just Josh Gibson, but, you know, like Buck Leonard, this is a Panini Prism Buck Leonard card that I picked up in the last year. And he doesn't have really any vintage cardboard or any playing era cardboard, but he's a fascinating personality. And so this is a modern card. It's, you know, to some of the points we brought up earlier, I took my time. It's a card numbered to 10. It's gold. So it's got a lot of those other attributes that I like, but it's a player that played during the vintage era. So just because you collect modern cards doesn't mean you need to stick to modern players or players who played after 1980. And, you know, Adam brought up the point earlier in this episode, you know, some people just don't follow modern sports, which I get. You know, I cut the cable cord on cable probably about 5 years ago. And it's one of the main reasons I'm not really a Red Sox team collector anymore, because I can't watch the team any longer. So I've kind of transitioned over to just being a general collector of of the game. But even if you only like those old players, there's tons of opportunity in modern to get into those older players who played back in the day. And, you know, another example, like I talked about at the beginning of the episode, that is Satchel Paige. This is the only vintage Satchel Paige card that I own. I wish I had the 48 Leaf or the 49 Bowman, maybe someday. I don't have them. But for me to reach out and get one of those cards would be a huge deal. I'm either going to not have to buy cards for like 6 months to a year, which is not going to happen, or I've got to sell a bunch of cards to get into it. But I can go out and get a card like this, you know, Topps Gilded Collection Satchel Paige, which is absolutely gorgeous, has amazing shine. And this set me back like $25. It's numbered to 50. And I can, you know, expand on my Satchel Paige collection, which is something that I wouldn't be able to do if I was, you know, strictly sticking to vintage. So that was kind of the first point I wanted to make there.
Okay, I can take them off now. Dude, when you showed that Satchel Paige, I had to immediately put these things on. That card is incredible looking.
We got Pepino Man on here.
Nice.
Dude, that's awesome, Shane. I want to keep you talking. What else you got?
Yeah, I think, I mean, some of the other points I already made, you know, I don't really, while we, as collectors, we try to define and catalog and organize everything, but, and that's fine if you're working on like a checklist or a player run, but I don't feel like the eras of baseball cards really fit into neat little boxes like that. You know, like I talked about with Nolan Ryan, if you're going to collect him, you're going to have cards from the 60s and cards from the 90s. It's unavoidable. And so, you know, to me, cards are cards. You're in it for fun. You're in it because you enjoy the hobby. If your goal is to, your number one overriding goal is to maintain the value of your collection, the monetary value of your collection, I would say you're better off sticking with vintage because it's a known commodity. But if you just want to have fun and enjoy yourself, there's so much to love about modern cardboard. You know, and another point I wanted to make about modern, you get access to like a trove of amazing images and photographs that you don't have available if you stick to vintage only. Like if you look at like a Hank Aaron or Willie Mays, yeah, here you go, Dylan. So, you know, Mickey Mantle, he's great, but like some of his cards in the 60s, they kind of look similar. He has some epic cards in the 50s, but they're largely portrait shots, and you're not going to get photos like those two beautiful gold refractors you just showed, you know, action images or kind of quirky off the wall images. And one of the sets, the modern sets that I enjoy the most on that front is Stadium Club. You know, I've got playing era Hank Aaron cards. I love Hank Aaron, but like this image here, you know, again, if you stick to vintage, look at that image. Like, how awesome is that? Maybe the two best baseball players in the history of the game, Hank Aaron and Willie Mays, laughing together. I'm guessing this is at like an all-star game. I think that might be Dodger Stadium in the background. I'm not entirely sure. But like, that is an all-time image that you're not going to get if you stay away from modern cards. And again, if monetary value isn't your goal, you can go out and get a copy of this for 50 cents on ComC and just kind of enjoy this in your collection. So, you know, if the images on the card and the aesthetics on a card matter to you, then I think modern is, you know, has some great opportunities. Joe DiMaggio, I have one other example here. You know, this play ball card is great. I love it. But like this image is equally cool to me. This is a 2015 Stadium Club card. And like, how great is that photograph?
Man. I've never
Joe
seen
DiMaggio.
That. Awesome. Look at that photo.
It's like a drone took that from.
That's yeah, incredible. Killer. And I think these bats are you know, writing out the number 45,
shit.
Which I think
that's
is the record that he broke for a consecutive game hit streak. So just there's a trove of images that you will never get access to if you strictly stick to vintage cardboard.
Might even get Rick to buy some modern stuff, modern shiny stuff.
Well, and it's, you know what, that's a great point. So I have we'll use that as a segue. You know, I like unique cards. I mentioned, I think, when I was talking about why I collect modern, I'm drawn, the longer I'm in the hobby, the more I'm drawn to cards that you just don't see every day or that are different than the norm. And in the vintage world, if you want to go after those type of cards, you better have a big wallet. You're going to be battling the John Manginis and the Ricks of the world and the Blue Jacket 66ers, you're going to be on Robert Edwards auction houses. Like, I don't play in that sphere. I want to stay engaged and buy smaller cards more often. But in modern, I can go out and get something, you know, like this Joe DiMaggio. There's seven copies of this. It's a members only parallel. There's only seven in existence. So you're not going to find this every day, but it cost me $25. And I added an item to my collection that's unique, that you don't see all the time. And I can do it on a budget, which is not always the case. You know, yes, there are oddball or very different vintage cards outside, you know, the Topps and Bowman and Gaudi that you see more frequently. But those are very, very expensive cards. And you're not going to stumble upon or be able to use research as like an advantage to get those cards for yourself. Like, they're a known commodity. They're extremely expensive. And there's, without a lot of money, you're just not going to acquire them. But with vintage, and especially, you know, the newer modern stuff, I feel like you can use your time invested and the learning that you're doing to kind of get a leg up in some cases and kind of find these diamonds in the rough for a cheap coin. That are still unique and kind of differentiate your collection from all the other collections that are out there.
Love it. Oh, Adam, before you answer, I have another question. If you can answer this one too, but I kind of want to, because you got, Adam's got to go soon. Adam, I mean, to you, Shane, what do you say to people who say those are manufactured scarcity? That's the biggest thing that I think vintage collectors say, well, it's just manufactured, it's the company stamping those cards. What is your response to something like that as a defender of collecting modern as a way to store some value? And for me, like, when I buy a card, I want it to be worth money. So what's defending that position? Adam, I mean, you could take the other question too, but I thought this would be a good one. Get the fire rolling.
Guys, look, I know, first, I'm getting a lot of comments on my lighting. Look, I don't have the budget that you guys have, like John 3D80's kid, Rick, and sports card investor, to invest all this money in your setup and your lighting and your makeup. Look, I spend my money on cards, guys, all right? I'm into cards. I'm not into lighting.
The only guy here that has the 52 mantle.
I don't care how things look in my garage here, okay? I don't care how pretty I look. If people can see my face, I'm fine. Relax. Anyway, sorry guys. I'm just kidding. I hope I'm very sarcastic. I hope no one ever takes offense to anything, because I'm always kidding.
Everyone's so mad at you.
to your question, manufactured scarcity. You're right. It is. And so what? Who cares? I don't care. Here's the thing. I love I love a chase. I think a lot of us do. That's why we're in this thing, right? For a lot of us, is to chase stuff. And we don't want it to be over real quick, right? So there's two ways to do it. And I've done both and I enjoy both. One is when you save up the money to buy a card that's always there, right? Like a 52 mantle. It's a chase because I got to save up the money to buy this damn thing. It's always going to be there when I want it, but I got to save up the money. All right. So that's cool. You know, that's fine. And a lot of vintage cards are like that. When you save up the money, then you go get the next thing. It's always there. There's always 10 on eBay. You can always get it. Now, Dylan, I know. Yes. Centered. Of course. There's not that many centered ones. So you chase, and I agree with you. I'm totally in agree. I'm not being facetious there. I totally agree with you. But with modern, that you can do a different chase, which is you can chase cars that aren't that expensive that might not come around for years. And man, let me tell you something. That's fun. When a card pops up that you've been waiting to pop up for 3 years and it pops up and you score it for $100, that's fun, man. So that's my sales pitch. It's funny because I was just thinking about the first interview I ever went on after I got out of college. This guy, I never forget it. It was for a sales job that I didn't even want. I was just doing it because that's what you're supposed to do. I went to college and now I got to go on this interview for a job I'm going to hate. And the guy goes, all right, sell me this pen. He goes, sell me this pen. And I just looked at him and I was like, I'm just going to walk out of here, man. This is stupid.
All that college you went to, and that was the question he asked?
We paid all that money to go to college, and you're asking me to sell you a pen? Give me a break, man. All right, I'm fired up tonight. That's my sales pitch. So, yeah, I forget if there was any other questions.
I think that was the perfect answer. I feel the same way. I don't deny. Obviously, it's manufactured scarcity. These cards are being created right now in modern times, so that's the only type of scarcity that's going to exist. with modern cards is manufactured scarcity. But to me, that doesn't, you know, to your point, Adam, that doesn't lessen the joy of finding that gem. And I've had the same experience where there's been cards where I've, you know, wondered whether they even exist or not for 2 or 3 years. And then you finally land it. And that feeling is, you know, just as good as landing like a huge vintage card to me anyway. So I think that was the perfect answer to that question.
And Rick had a question in the chat before about pre-war. And I think there's a lot of parallels with certain pre-war cards and some modern cards where, you know, with pre-war, you might wait years for that card to pop up. And then, like you said, people are going after it on Heritage, or there's even some ones that go under the radar still, you know, pre-war stuff. So it's not all
that's going to poke Rick right there. That's going to poke him.
Yeah. Well, no, I'm complimenting. I love pre-war.
The old ones.
I love the idea of pre-war. I haven't really gone too far into it, but I like kind of the idea of how to collect pre-war where you don't worry about condition or grade. It's just about finding that card when it comes up, and it's fun.
Dude, I love it. I mean, this is turning into some fire already. Shane, do you have the same answer to that, the rarity thing? Because that's the number one thing that is always thrown around. Like, it's fake rarity. Is it?
Yeah, and I mean, you know, so two things about that. I agree. Like, you know, like I said, I think Adam's answer was perfect. I'm not denying that. It is artificial scarcity. The companies are producing the cards right now, and they're making fewer of some than they are of others. But to me, that doesn't diminish the reward. And two-part answer. But number one, especially with modern, I'm not in it for an investment. I'm in it for fun. So I don't buy, I buy a lot more smaller dollar modern cards. You know, I'm not buying comma cards of modern cards. So there's not the same amount of money invested yet. Okay, this Joe DiMaggio, is it artificial scarcity that there's only 7 copies of this parallel out there? Yes. But I spent $20 on it. The same amount of money as if I went down to Target and bought a blaster of Topps, which would probably yield nothing for my collection when once I was through with the excitement of opening it. So it's not like it's keeping me up at night, whether or not these cards maintain their value. But the other part of that is, you know, if money is your goal, or maintaining the value of collection is your goal, I think Adam can attest to this. If you buy the right stuff and you know your stuff and you do your research, there are absolutely modern cards that have and will continue to skyrocket in value, because there's a ton of people out there like Adam and myself that feel this way and that are hunting those cards and that get excited when they finally pop up. And I mean, some of the cards, some of the Pedro cards I've seen Adam show on his channel are just like mind blowing to me. And you know, things that you won't see for 10 or 20 years in the hobby. I mean, Adam's shown some Pedros that I've never seen in all the time I've been in the hobby. And so those cards, I am confident will hold their value in the same way that his Mickey Mantle run is going to into the future.
And by the way, I want to add before I go, I want to defend Pedro a little bit here. I've been showing a lot of Pedro stuff on my channel here, and I've been getting some even private messages of like, what's with Pedro? Why are you collecting Pedro? Hey guys, he's the number 11 top, he's the ranked 11th best baseball player of all time by ESPN. So there we go. How about that?
I'm going to get roasted for this in the comments, but around the turn of the century, he was Koufax-esque in the late 90s and the early 2000s, absolutely lights out. I saw him in person plenty of times as a Red Sox fan living in New England, and he is the greatest pitcher I've ever seen with my own two eyes. So you're not going to get any crap from me, Adam.
How do you like that, Greg, in the chat?
You won't get any crap from me. I wasn't a fan of Pedro because he was so dominant. I'm not a fan of the Red Sox. So yeah, but I love that you're going after him. I think it's smart. I think he's insane.
And it's just, you know, I think that's the whole thing. If you don't have anyone you really connect to, or you don't care about sports, you haven't cared about sports in a long time, then maybe modern isn't for you. But even though you may not have a favorite player or even a team, it still can be a fun thing. Like Dylan, I love the fact that you've said before, like there's been periods of your life where you didn't even care about sports. You know, you weren't even, you know, watching sports, or didn't even really care that much about, you know, you're probably not as much of a sports fan as a lot of guys on YouTube, but you love cards more than anybody I know. So it's about the, it can be about the cards too. Like it just the history of the cards and why they're awesome, regardless of the player. So there's different ways you can go about it.
Yeah. I know Lou Rock, I've seen him popping up in the comments here. You know, he's obviously a big Clemente guy. Like this, here's a Clemente card that, you know, is awesome. Like this is from Gilded Collection, but I did, Adam, ooh, I latched on to your Fab Four video concept, which I absolutely love, by the way. And I chose this as one of my four favorite Roberto Clemente cards, even though I have vintage Clemente. There's Dylan's binder of Gilded right there.
It always amazes me how fast you guys, like some of you guys, like Dylan, you just within 2 seconds, you pull it out. Like, how did you do that?
Dude, when I got a video going, I have my binders. Well, they're behind this wall. This thing pulls out. But I have some that I want, I might represent, and that happened to be right there. Dude, I'm organized. I don't have a ton. I don't have millions of cards. I have a precise amount. I actually just went through my graded slabs and took everything out. I sold and everything. I'm actually down to 900, and I think it was 38, which is awesome because I really was trying to bring that number down over the last year and a half, but it kept growing. But then I finally, because of taxes, I had to write everything I sold, and I took everything out, cleaned it, and I'm like, I was proud of myself. I was like, okay, I have less cards this year than I did last year, but better cards, more fun cards. So okay, there was another question a long time ago. Adam, just let us know when you gotta leave.
I just decided I'm going 9 more minutes. I'm going to the hour mark. I'm going.
Okay. Yeah,
I wish I could do this longer, but yeah, I'm going 9 more minutes.
Okay, so if you look at your collection, what percentage of your collection is vintage versus modern, if you had a rough estimate? And include what your collection is, not just cards in boxes, but like your collection that you know is yours. So Adam, since you're leaving, why don't you go first in case you take 90 minutes?
It's definitely it's more modern now. It used to be pretty much all vintage for a while. And now with the heavy Tom Brady and Pedro cards that I've been picking up, I would probably say it's like 70-30. And that just has to do with the fact that, there's more modern cards to go after than vintage. So, I still love vintage. I don't want people to think that I love vintage. But, I would say it's probably 70-30, 70 modern, 30 vintage.
Okay. Shane, what about you?
So I actually have a weirdly specific answer to that, because when you threw this concept out a couple of days ago, I had just recently on my channel done like a top 100 countdown of like my favorite 100 cards that I've shown across all the time I've been on YouTube. And so before we got on tonight, I just took a quick look at my spreadsheet, and across that 100 cards, just figured out how many of them were vintage, 1980 and prior, and how many were modern. And it was 56 vintage cards and 44 modern cards. So I'm like right about down the middle. And I think if you looked at my collection overall, on the whole, it's close to 50-50. I really just enjoy all of it. Maybe in recent years, like Adam, I've maybe bought a little bit more modern than vintage, but I love it all.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'm probably 80-20, 20% modern, 80%. Vintage, but modern, like we talk, I mean, it's just so much, I hate to say the word easy, but it is a lot easier to buy the card because you don't really have to look for those perfectly good looking fours. You can just, once you find the card, you're hoping that it's in a nine or below because you don't want to spend the 10 tax. So you're really trying to find that it's hard to find the card, but once you find it, condition doesn't matter because it's not going to be bent in half. It's not going to be wrecked. Whereas you could hunt for 3 years to find a perfect 1958 Warren Spahn that has no print dots and is perfectly centered, and it is not a 9 or a 10. It literally could take you 3 years. But the modern, I mean, once you find a path like these goals that I found, I mean, you can get the whole collection in a month on most of them. But then there's those ones that just boom, but it's so fun because you can jump from player to player. So I collect about four different players, I think, in modern and ultra modern now. What about you guys? What other players do you guys collect in ultra modern and modern? I know, Adam, I think I know your guys's, but Shane, give us your group of guys, your main guys.
Yeah, I mean, for baseball, I'm a big Mookie Betts fan. So, you know, I live in New England. I go to tons of Red Sox games every year, even though I don't watch them on TV anymore. He brought the latest championship to the city in 2018. He won a batting title that year, an MVP. He was the guy. He's an awesome just individual, too. Like, he just seems like off the field. He's a really solid dude. He's actually like a professional bowler. He's bowled some perfect games. He's just a fascinating guy. Beautiful card right there.
Just keep color talking. Match. I'm just showing.
Oh, yeah. No. So, yeah, Mookie Betts is a big one for me. I do have quite a bit of Mike Trout. And I know, you know, I'll get roasted for that just right alongside you, Dylan. But to me, you know, regardless of the injuries, other things, you look at his WAR and his numbers. And more importantly, you know, there's the game of baseball and then there's the hobby of baseball cards. And I think regardless of what happens the rest of Mike Trout's career, to me, he's on my Mount Rushmore of the baseball card hobby just because of how big his rookie card is. And he was like the guy throughout the entire 2010s, you know, three MVPs. And I think he brought him and Shohei Ohtani, you know, brought a lot of people into the hobby and kind of continued the excitement on from guys like Mickey Mantle and Ken Griffey Jr. And I kind of think Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani are, you know, in large part, maybe those next names that kind of are continuing that trend onward. So I try to go for the bigger guys, especially if I'm going to spend a decent amount of money on a modern card, because again, it is risky. You know, I have one nice Wander Franco card because I wanted one in case he went on to have a Hall of Fame career, but I wouldn't, you know, I try to safeguard myself to the extent that I can and really stick with like the superstar players. And then in the case of Mookie Betts, somebody who has, you know, personal meaning to me, who I've seen play and who had a lot of success, you know, for my area of the country that I live in.
I have a lot to say there, but Adam, anything else you want to add to anything?
Well, one last point too, kind of going back, but I'm drawing these parallels, you know, like there's a lot of people who collect pre-war that do type collecting, right? So it's not just about, I need a Babe Ruth card or a Ty Cobb card or Lou Gehrig or Joe Jackson or any of it's, I just want a card from this set. Like, for example, I wanted a 1914 Cracker Jack card. So I got a Stuffy McGinnis, you know, a good player, not a Hall of Famer, you know, but a good story to him. Regardless of the player, I wanted a card from that set. And that set carries weight in the hobby, regardless of what player is on the card. You can also say that about these cards and these sets, right? So you got, you know, precious metal gems, essential credentials, whether it's Drew Bledsoe or Pedro Martinez or whoever, common players. It doesn't even matter. Like, these are, you know, Hall of Fame. Bledsoe's not a Hall of Famer, but he was a Pro Bowler. And then you got Pedro, Hall of Famer, all-time great. But even if it's whoever, insert player name, these cards and these sets carry weight because there's people that are always going to want these cards from these inserts or these sets, regardless of who's on the card. They're always going to maintain some value. Or even aside from that, they're always going to maintain importance in the hobby because of how important the cards were in that set. So there we go.
Yeah. And I think, you know, just to kind of come around, like I said earlier, not everything fits into a neat definition or a box either. And some of it is like a gut judgment call. Like, you know, we have players we gravitate towards or sets or numbered cards or whatever else. But at the end of the day, a card has to speak to me. I'm not going to buy a card just because this is what I do and this is the lane I'm in. You know, there's an intangible, you know, element where a card just has to, and it's hard to kind of put your finger on it, but I think the longer you're at it and the more you're influenced by others and you make mistakes and you learn from your mistakes and over time, you just kind of, you get a gut feeling on whether it's a card that's one you want to add to your collection or not. And I think most people watching this probably can relate to that to an extent.